draw your attention back to that second lesson we had, the one from 1 John. And if you remember when I went over it, I pointed out how terribly important it is. The writer of this, writing to a group of people that he's familiar with, that he has an affection for, gives them some good advice. The sort of thing that Paul is good at in all of the New Testament. And that is that he realizes that the only authentic way that the whole drama, the whole life, the whole sacrifice of Jesus Christ ever has any lasting significance is through the activity of the people who take on his name. In the book of Acts, you heard that story about the growth of the church outside of Jerusalem to Samaria. And then there is superimposed on it that odd story about the eunuch who is riding in a chariot and reading from the book of Isaiah. See? And he is a eunuch in service to Candace, who was the queen of Ethiopia. Anyway, stories don't get any more odd than that, really. You know, and there are all those faraway places and all those strange things. And he's reading aloud, and it's not because he's a fool. In the early world, people, when they read aloud, say. And he ends up being baptized, say. And it's a strange and miraculous and sort of out of context thing. Say. And then you go back to that 1 John reading, say, the authentication of what has happened here, this great sacrifice, is going to be mirrored and reflected through those people who take on the name. Just like this eunuch was baptized, and then there's another strange thing that happens. It's a sort of a little caveat at the end of that story, you know, as it is. Now, Philip's gone, and he ends up someplace else, miles away. See, such is the nature of the early church. There's still mystery, and there's still the power and the spiritual that's a part of it. See, so much of that has gotten wrung out of the church over the years because of the attitude of the people who make it up. Okay? What I find befuddling and puzzling and troublesome in this world is, you know, and when certain groups of people feel they've been offended and certain groups of people don't get their own way, they can go out there in some sort of act of civil disobedience and wax hot and heavy about something. But, you know, most of the enthusiasm and the zeal and the authentication of what really went down with Jesus Christ has gone out of the church. And that's a shame. Because in the final theme of things, in the final play of this great drama of life, the thing that's going to actually make all the difference, and the thing in the pecking order, which is the top and filters down and reflects upon everything else that we do and the way we get along with each other, is how we celebrate this sacrifice. And of course, this is that moment we come to remember that. You know, we live in a troubled, puzzling, convoluted, and convulsing world. It's just a fact of life. And while we can't even collectively here change that, we can make a difference where we go to make some little difference about it. Because, as the writer said, the only thing that's left is us and the Spirit. And inasmuch as you dwell in the Spirit, you understand what the right thing is to do. The very nature of who we are supposed to be is love. And sometimes that's absolutely, positively the hardest thing in the world to do. And I know that. You all know that. But in spite of all that, take a look at the sacrifice that was made for you. Is there any reason that you can come up with why God should love us? I can't think of one, and yet he does. and we're asked to do the same. Let us come to the Lord's table and celebrate this great gift.